Prabhupada ki. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki. Premsa gaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivastava go. Bhaktavinda ki jay. Sri Sri Radha Krishna ko Prabhupanath. Sri Mukundra Radha Kund Kir Govardhan ki. Sri Vrindavanam ki. Mayapur Nagaripalam ki jai, Sri Jagannath Puri Dham ki, Nagarmay ki, Vajamana ki, Tulsi Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Samadhi Bhakti ki jai. All glories to the Sangha devotees, all glories to the Sangha devotees, all glories to the Sangha devotees, Gaur Premanandi. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from 5th Canto, Chapter 13, Mahogana converses with Jada Bharat. Text 4. Nivasa, Nivasa, Toya, Dravinatma, Budhis, Tatas, Tato, Dhavati, Bo, At Kavyam Kvachit Cha Vat Yotit Vat Yotitta Panchu Dumra Disho Na Janati Rajas Valaksha Dilaksha Nivasya Toya Dravinatma Buddhis Tatastato Dhavati Bhoatavyam Bhoatavyam Kvachitcha Vat Yot Tita Panchu Dumra Dishona Janati Rajas Valaksha. Please chant. Nivasatoya Jivinatma Buddhis. Tatastato Dhavati Bo Atavyam. Kachit chavat yotita Yasana janati rajasvalaksha. That was okay, it's commendable, but you kind of made every syllable the same length, and next year you'll, when you take Radhika Raman's class next year, then you'll learn about holding certain syllables, accenting certain syllables. Listen. Psh, psh, listen. Nivasatoya Dravinatma Buddhis. Dattastato Dhavati Bhuvatavyam. Kachichavat yotita bhamsa dhumra Dishuna janati rajas valaksha. Oh, Prabhupada said 5 or 10 times. Come on. Chant the verse 5 or 10 times.
Nimvasatoya dravinatma buddhis. Tatastato davati bhovatavyam. Kachichapato titabam sudumra. Yasuna janati rajasvalaksaha. Nivasatoya dravinatma buddhis. Tatastato davati bhutavyam. Kachichavyato titam sudhumna. Dishnan janati rajasvalaksaha.
Ladies, please. Ladies? You can't what?
I cannot see it.
Really? Why? You're too far away?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nivasatoya dravinat mabudesh. Tatastato dravati bhavatavyam. Kachichavat yot titapam sudumna. Tishona janati rajasvalaksham.
Anybody else? Come on, ladies. No, but the younger ladies can have good eyes.
Nivasatoya dravinatma buddhis. Tatastato davati bhuvatavyam. Kachichavatyo titabham sudumna. Vishana janati rajasvalakshaha.
Nivasa. Residential place. Toya. Water. Dravina. Wealth. Atmabuddhi. Who considers these things the Atma or Self. Ta 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 ta. Here and there. Dhavati. He runs. Bo. O king. Atavyam. On that forest path. Of material existence. Kachitcha. And sometimes. Vatya. By the whirlwind. Utita, raised, Panchu, by dust, Dumra, appear smoke colored, Disha, the directions, Na, not, Janati, knows, Rajavalaksha, whose eyes are covered by the dust of the wind, or who is captivated by his wife during her menstrual period. Translation and purport. My dear king, the merchant on the forest path of the material world, his intelligence victimized by home, wealth, relatives, and so forth, runs from one place to another in search of success. Sometimes his eyes are covered by the dust of a whirlwind. That is to say, in his lust, he is captivated by the beauty of his wife, especially during her menstrual period. Thus, his eyes are blinded, and he cannot see where to go or what he is doing. It is said that household attraction resides in the wife because sex is the center of household life. Yanmai tunari grihamedi sukham hitucham. A materialistic person making his wife the center of attraction works very hard day and night. His only enjoyment in material life is sexual intercourse. Therefore, karmis are attracted to women as friends or wives. Indeed, they cannot work without sex. Under the circumstances, the wife is compared to a whirlwind, especially during her menstrual period. Those who strictly follow the rules and regulations of householder life engage in sex only once a month at the end of the menstrual period. If one looks forward to this opportunity, his eyes are overwhelmed by the beauty of his wife. Thus, it is said that the whirlwind covers the eyes with dust. Such a lusty person does not know that all his material activities are being observed by different demigods, especially the sun god, and are being recorded for the karma of one's next body. Astrological calculations are called Jyoti Shastra because the Jyoti or effulgence in the material world comes from the different stars and planets. The science is called Jyoti Shastra, the science of the luminaries. By the calculations of Jyoti, our future is indicated. In other words, all the luminaries, the stars with sun and moon, witness the activities of the conditioned soul. Thus he is awarded a particular type of body. A lusty person whose eyes are covered by the dust of the whirlwind of material existence does not at all consider that his activities are being observed by different stars and planets and are being recorded. Not knowing this, he, the conditioned soul, commits all kinds of sinful acts for the satisfaction of his lusty desires.
Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishna Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Saraswate Deve Gaurvani Pacharine Nirvase Sashunyamadi Paschat Tadeshatane Nevasatoya Dravinatma Buddhis Tatastato Davati Bo Atavyam Krachitcha Vat yot titta pamsur dhumra dishona janati rajas valakshaha.
Why are astronomical calculations called Jyoti Shastra? Because the planets give light, yeah. The sun and the moon, they're called luminaries or bright. Jyoti, the effulgence in the world that comes from the different planets, the stars, the sun. And here they're described as witnesses. So we'll talk a little bit about that today. We'll also talk about the menstrual cycle of the woman and the rules of procreation. And the intelligence, the buddhi is described as being misdirected. The buddhi is victimized. The intelligence is victimized by identifications with home and money. So I consider my home and I consider my income myself. I put myself into it. My brother built a house yesterday, Radhika Raman, who was talking about the American dream, you know. So my brother did this. He built a nice house for himself and invested, you know, not only money, but, you know, his thinking and feeling, wheeling. Prabhupada said once that a materialist thinks, how I can have a nice home? I'd like a big home, maybe something specific about it. I want, you know, he thinks in terms of himself and his sense gratification, but a pure devotee thinks, let me build a nice home for Krishna. Prabhupada said this in Vrindavan after he built the Krishna Balaram temple, and he was lecturing and talking about the buddhi. He was talking about the instructions of Rishabhadev regarding the buddhi, and said that we can transform the desires of the mind by engaging them in Krishna service. So if I want to, I want some nice building. So if I transform that and think, I want it for Krishna, not for myself, we become pure devotees. We don't invest the self in the temporary illusions or the temporary attachments. But the materialist does. And he thinks that he's even religious when he does this. We have in Sanskrit the words kula dharma. So that means the dharma pertaining to the family. Arjun talked about this in the first chapter. And people in general, they think in terms of their family. I have a religious obligation in terms of my family. And that may include some religious rituals. It may even extend to a kind of national religion, like the American. He thinks, sociologists have analyzed how Americans think in terms of what's called the civil religion. What does it mean to be an American, religiously speaking? What are the religious values of Americans? What are the generalized attitudes, religious attitudes? So they've analyzed civil religion. So that may include, like, maintaining the family. That's something God wants us to do. You can draw that out of the Abrahamic religions. Kula dharma, take care of the family, be responsible for the family. And then think of the family's wealth and well-being. My father had a motto. A motto means a saying. And my father's motto was, another day, another dollar. Another day, another dollar. That was sort of, you know, what he used to get himself enthusiastic. He was earning money. It was a good time in America to earn money. And he was very happy to do it because the country had been in a depression. He had seen, you know, people's wealth just removed from them on a mass scale. And so when the opportunity came to, the economy was strong again, he was into it. He would rise early at 4 o'clock even, get out of bed, wash up, and then go to the office and start thinking about his business accounts, searching for success, this verse says. Searching here and there in the forest. Where can I make money here? Where can I make money there? He runs from one place to another in search of success. But why? If you say, my dear sir, you're going to have to leave it all behind, why do you invest so much time in earning money? He'll say, well, no, but for the 20 or 30 years or 40 or 50 years, we want to have lots of things. This is partly driven by desire. It's partly driven by greed and envy. You want more than others. You want what others have. You want others to think you are very prestigious and powerful and wealthy. So my father became a millionaire, and when he retired, he and my mother went to live in a house next to a golf course because that was their favorite sport. They could just walk out of their house and go to the golf course. They didn't have to even get in the car. But things quickly deteriorated, and I'll explain a little what happened. My father, to make it easier, you know, in his old age, he would ride on a golf cart around the course. He didn't have to walk and pull his clubs. So that was even maybe better, he thought, you know. But then, eventually he had a stroke, and with the heart stroke comes some partial paralysis. Some parts of the body start to shut down. He's not so mobile anymore in moving his arms or his legs or shoulders. So when I visited him once, I was speaking with them, my parents, and my uncle and aunt, about how unfortunate it is that we cannot take with us what we've acquired in this life. We have to leave it all behind. You have to leave the house and everything behind. And when my uncle and aunt left the home that evening, my father got on my case and he said, you keep your philosophy to yourself in my house. He said, this is my temple. So what's the implication? That I am God. If this is my temple, I'm in charge, I'm in control, I'm the enjoyer. So don't, you know, give another philosophy. But unfortunately, this was, you know, a short-lived dominion. He was not the Lord for much longer. Time came and removed him from the scene. So therefore, Lord Rishabhadev and Jagbharat, they're telling us the buddhi, the intelligence, should reject the undue desires of the mind. There's kama, desire, anger, greed, lobha, pride, mana, illusion. These are not things you want to live with. You don't want to, you know, become proud and greedy and all of these things. This whole fifth canto, the first part, is all about this important family, Rishabhadev, his descendant Bharat, who becomes later Jagbharat. So actually Jagbharat is passing on the teachings of his father. If we look in the fifth chapter, or fifth canto, fifth canto, if we would look now at the verses there, 1 through 18, we would find the same instructions. Here they are. When the living entity is covered by ignorance, he doesn't understand the living entity, individual living entity, and the supreme being. He thinks in terms of fruit of gain, fruit of activity, until one has love for Vasudev, who is none other than myself, Rishabhadev is saying. He's certainly not delivered from having to accept another material body. Being forgetful of his interest, he tries to be happy, centering his interests around the home based on sexual intercourse, which brings him all kinds of miseries. In this way, he's no better than an animal. So this is the Supreme Lord, Rishabhadev, speaking, passing on wisdom to his son Bharat, who later is now passing it on to the king. And we have the painting here to look at. So the verse doesn't actually mention the menstrual cycle, as far as I could tell. It seems to be something inserted in the verse from a commentary. Perhaps one of the Acharya's commentary commented like that. Srila Prabhupada sometimes took comments from Śrīla Mahārāja and put them into the translation of the verse. So here it's said, thus is he's captivated by the beauty of his wife, especially during her menstrual period. But it looks like in the verse it's just his eyes are covered by the dust of the whirlwind. The wife is compared to a whirlwind. And then Prabhupada, as you heard, in purport, he brings this point up about the rules and regulations of household life. During her menstrual period, the wife is compared to a whirlwind, because at that time, just after that time, one can follow the rules of household life, engage in sex once a month. And so the man, especially at that time, he's looking forward to this opportunity and becomes overwhelmed by the wife's beauty. So that's like the eyes being covered by the dust of the whirlwind. Okay. So that's stressing the monthly fertility of the woman and how it can be dovetailed into a religious and even a devotional practice. And one can succeed in household life despite this attachment. The fertility of the woman, the monthly fertility of the woman, is also a concern in other religions. I grew up as a Catholic. I think you did too, Rita. Huh? So there was this method that the Catholics, even the Catholic Church officially, discussed with its congregation worldwide of a kind of conception in which, no, not conception, sexual indulgence without conception, without creating a child. The Church wanted to make it possible for householders not to feel too restricted, because the Church recognizes fertility and procreation and sexuality as not bad things. So they didn't want to put sexuality in a bad light. Therefore, they told the congregation, you know, that when the woman is not fertile, then you can also engage in sex life. And that's called rhythm. You, according to the woman's rhythm, you can find the time when if you don't want to have a child, it's possible to have sex. Is that true that the Church officially sanctioned that? Maybe I'm wrong on that point. But certainly this was something that was talked about. I heard about this. I grew up hearing about this and learning about this. So it may have been officially the Church's position, or maybe it was just, you know, the lay Catholics' way of finding a way to do this, to arrange it. But in either case, and there might be other cases from other traditions, the truth is that the Prabhupada says the only happiness for the householder is sex, intercourse. But when he says only, of course, we know it can be extended. We can say that, well, the householders also enjoy happiness when they purchase things and when their children are growing up and getting educated. So only in this sense means highest, the highest happiness, and other forms of this, which include profit, adoration, and distinction. Those are also considered forms of this maituni, this happiness derived from sexual happiness, connected to it. In fact, the Bhagavatam says sexual happiness is a heavenly pleasure. People in the second canto, they're described as enjoying a heavenly happiness. I'll read this from the purport. The heavenly pleasure for the conditioned soul is sexual pleasure, And this pleasure is tasted by the genitals. The woman is the object of sexual pleasure. And both the sense perception of sexual pleasure and the woman are controlled by the Prajapati, who is under the control of the Lord's genitals. This is in a chapter in which a larger universal form of the Lord is described, I believe. So the impersonalist must know from this verse that the Lord is not impersonal, for he has his genitals on which all the pleasurable objects of sex depend. So in other words, from the origin, everybody has a small percentage of whatever the Lord has. So the Lord has some beauty, we have some beauty. The Lord is all intelligent, we have some. The Lord has genitals and the conditioned souls also. So it depends, it says, the Lord's genitals are the source of all the pleasurable objects of sex. And why? Why is it like this? It's explained what the purpose is. No one would have taken the trouble to maintain children if there were no taste of heavenly nectar by means of sexual intercourse. This world is created to give the conditioned souls a chance for rejuvenation, for going back to Godhead. And therefore, generation of the living being is necessary for the upkeep of the purpose of creation. More and more children have to be created because the living being needs this body to make spiritual advancement, to go back to Godhead. And sexual pleasure is an impetus for such action. And as such, one can even serve the Lord in the act of such sexual pleasure. Jai Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Sri Gunatai Sri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Simatita Subhadra. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that he is identical to Cupid, the generative power. Or in the purport we read, Prajapati is in charge, one of the Prajapatis. Or if we use the Western knowledge of astronomy, then Venus is spoken of. Also in the astrological, Vedic astrological scheme, Venus, the planet Venus, also in the West, she's renowned for beauty. And that beauty has two aspects, spiritual and temporary. In the spiritual sense, Venus's beauty symbolizes the Lord's abode. Just like here, Srimati Radharani, who's always with Krishna, we know that she's always in Vrindavan. And her expansion is Yoga Maya, who unites the souls with Krishna. And Yoga Maya's expansion, Radharani's expansion, another expansion is Mahamaya. And so Mahamaya symbolizes the dwelling place of the conditioned soul. She creates the temporary world. And Venus stands for both. Venus symbolizes, on a higher level, God's dwelling place. And on a lower level, she symbolizes earthly love, the love of bodies, love between bodies. She can remind us either of heaven or the spiritual world or of earthly love. And the medieval thinkers, people in the medieval times, philosophers, even religionists, poets, and people in general, they would be reminded of Venus when they saw the morning star, or the evening star. That's Venus, that bright star you see in the morning and evening. And that could inspire people in two ways. It could inspire them to think, oh, the cosmos is so large, and look, I can see Venus, and it's so far away. And even beyond that is, there's heaven beyond that. I should lift my thoughts, you know, and think of the divine realm, which I can achieve. So that's one type of meditation that used to go on. And then at the same time, then the meditation would return to their, with their feet on the ground, and they would think, ah, but I have my family and my home and my wife. Okay, so let me have both. Let me have the reminder of heaven, and let me also have earthly love. So this mixture of body and soul, body and soul, body and soul. We have a higher nature, we have a lower nature. And throughout history, in medieval times in the West, in other times, Vedic times of Rahugana, people were always thinking of the body and soul and what, how to balance this and how to make human love remain in line, how to keep human love in line with spiritual knowledge. Because if we just entertain human love without reference to love of God, then things get out of line, things get out of balance. Okay, I am ready to take questions or comments. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm wondering what Prabhupada would say about the great definition of new mind, about what's spiritual life. Because I've read many things and I don't understand. What about what Prabhupada say about it?
Well, we may not be able to just sum it up in one sentence or two. It may take paragraphs and pages because it's a big topic. And he said many things. So we don't want to try to just boil it down to a slogan, and it might be inaccurate. We might leave things out if we try to condense it too much. The other day I heard on a DVD a nice, I'll tell you an anecdote about Prabhupada in Los Angeles. Jayatirtha, who was in charge, had not succeeded in his first marriage somehow. And so he got married to another girl who was the head pujari. And so the head pujari is describing their wedding. And she said, you know, we got all dressed up and it was really quite a celebration. We did it in the backyard. We didn't do it in the temple because it was the second marriage for Jayatirtha. And, you know, we used gopi dots. I had all kinds of gopi dots around my eyes to make my eyes look beautiful. We invited Prabhupada, but he wasn't feeling well. So we did it without him. But then when we went to his room to bring him some of the prasadam, very nice prasadam had been prepared. So we went to see Prabhupada with prasadam. And, you know, she said it was funny because a couple of days before that we had been having Bhagavatam classes and Prabhupada had been teaching the points that a beautiful woman, beautiful wife is the enemy of the husband. Because the man will become so attached. I have a beautiful wife. So when this young lady, I forgot her name, when she and her Jayatirtha went to see Prabhupada, she said Prabhupada was very kind of in a joking mood because it was her wedding day. And when she came in, Prabhupada said, without actually saying you, he used the third person, she, as if, you know, he was just talking about somebody else, or not her, not to you. He didn't talk to her. He said, oh, she is very beautiful. And she felt so pleased that Prabhupada was appreciating how much she had dressed up and how nice she looked. But then she remembered that just a few days before he had said, "Oh, beautiful woman, see any of those?" So she realized Prabhupada was joking in a kind of philosophical way. He was keeping that truth in mind that there can be too much attachment if the wife is beautiful. But at the same time, he was complimenting her. So Prabhupada was, she appreciated very much Prabhupada's, you know, elevated, just in attitude. And then there was another joke also Prabhupada made. I forget that one. Okay? So I didn't answer your question, did I? I answered it in a roundabout way. Any other questions? Yes, Freddy? Yes. Good question. It should be clearly understood, and I have clear answers because it comes up again and again. Sometimes when we have brahmachari retreats, we talk about this. How are we to understand the conjugal love between Radha and Krishna? They have transcendental bodies. Satchidananda vigraha. Satchid ananda vigraha. That's not a temporary body like this, made, constructed from blood and bones and skin and fat. And all our sense of sexual pleasure comes from the genital. We don't experience sexual pleasure unless we're engaged like that. But can pleasure be experienced on the spiritual platform without the genitals? The answer is yes, it can. Why? Because as we sing every morning, now when you sing this verse in the morning, I want you to remember this. Yes, ya sakalendriya vyadriyavit. Help me out. Angani yasya sakalendriya vriti manti pasyanti panti kalayanti chiranjaganti. What does that mean? You should know. With any one of his senses, Krishna can perform the function of any other sense. So if Krishna wants to experience the pleasure of the genitals, it doesn't require that he use the genitals. Just by seeing the beauty of Radharani, he can experience the most intimate conjugal satisfaction. Just by smelling the aroma of Radharani's body. Like a man, an ordinary husband, when his wife puts on perfume, they're going out, so she puts on perfume, or just during the day she puts on perfume. And he says, "Oh, you stink, so pretty." And he feels pleasure. That's what my father used to tell my mother. Just so, because Krishna is able with any sense to do the function of any other sense, it's not that Krishna, to enjoy with Radharani, has to, you know, like, material sex life. They're dancing, they're kissing, that's okay. They're conjugal relationships, they're embracing, dancing. It resembles the affairs. Now, Prabhupada said in Vrindavan there's no illicit sex. And Krishna, in the Krishna book, is described in Dwarka as having many wives. When he's married, Prabhupada said, then Krishna uses his genitals to produce children. So Krishna follows the regulative principles. He engages in sex only to have children. That's a good understanding to start with. If you want to go higher than that, if you want to go into the understandings of liberated souls and what they understand about Radha and Krishna's pastimes, don't, because you're not ready for it. Meditate on Krishna's lotus feet. You're not ready to meditate on Krishna's genitals and Krishna's loving affairs. Prabhupada said in the Bhagavatam, we start by meditating on the lotus feet of Krishna. That means the first and second canto we study until we are free from sex desire. Then we can understand something about the Lord's sexual pastimes. But we want to jump to the tenth canto all the time. So these are problems. But it should be understood the way I said, Angani yasya sakalan. Now when you come to the greeting of the deities, you'll hear this, and it'll have a lot more meaning for you. Krishna can create without the help of Lakshmi as Vishnu. Vishnu creates Brahma without Lakshmi's help. Just from his navel he can create a lotus and Brahma can sit there. So he doesn't need to use his sex organs. He can create with his eyes. It's said that he injects the souls, the living entities into the material nature's womb by looking at material nature. So Krishna can do... Now you understand better? Yes, okay. Any other questions? Thank you, that was a good question. I'm glad you brought it up because I wanted... These are good points to connect here. Okay, we can stop if there's no other comments. Good. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Bless you, the Prabhupada.